Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for October 16th, 2009.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
This week, scientists have discovered a vegetarian spider. We'll tell you about that and about some interesting new research on what makes Africanized bees so aggressive. We've also got a story about an attempt to make rocket fuels more environmentally friendly. But first, Suzanne Bard has the latest installment of our new series Reality Check, where we investigate paranormal claims, weird phenomena, and science folklore.
There's been a lot of hype lately about a so-called doomsday planet that some people think will collide with the Earth in December of 2012, destroying life as we know it. Here at Science Update, we thought it was about time we got out our baloney detectors to investigate. Yeah, enough from the peanut gallery over there.
Hey, those were high-priced Hollywood special effects.
The putative planet is called Nibiru, and it's supposedly the size of Jupiter. I asked space scientist David Morrison of the NASA Ames Research Center in California if such a planet even exists, and he says that Nibiru is just a complete fiction.
If there were a giant planet out there in the outer part of the solar system and headed now for the inner part in Earth, it would have been picked up over the last 30 years by any number of infrared surveys. There are probably 100,000 amateur astronomers out there with telescopes. They'd all have been seeing it and following it for the last few years. And by now, it'd be bright enough to be seen in the sky with the naked eye. Well, it isn't there. No one has ever seen it. And I think people are finally realizing that Nibiru is a no-show. There is no giant planet headed for the Earth.
While Nibiru is a complete fabrication, Morrison says the hype surrounding the imaginary killer planet is far from harmless.
Many people really are scared. I have had teenagers who say they don't want their life to end. Some have said, if the world's going to be destroyed, I'm going to take my own life first. I have had a woman write me the other day saying that she had a younger sister who was so upset about this, she hadn't been able to sleep for a month. They'd taken her to doctors and so forth. She was losing weight. She couldn't eat, all over being scared of this fictional event. And I think that's wrong. I think it's wrong for people to manufacture a fictional event that scares children.
Morrison says that much of this fear is being spread on the internet.
The internet is a wonderful thing. It is full of good information. It also has a lot of misinformation and disinformation.
Morrison reminds us to surf with a critical eye for detail and pay attention to the quality of the evidence presented and the kind of persuasive language that's used. And there's a great book out there if you haven't read it. It's Carl Sagan's Demon-Haunted World, and it includes a whole section on baloney detection. And if your favorite science myth needs a reality check, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT.
Thanks, Suzanne. Very good advice. And now for a real space story. Rocket fuel is notoriously polluting, but tiny aluminum particles suspended in ice could be the fuel of the future. It's being developed by both Purdue and Penn State universities, as well as NASA and the Air Force. Purdue mechanical engineer Steve Sun says it's based on an old idea that's somewhat counterintuitive.
You're using water as a reactant in a combustion process, whereas you typically think, well, I'm going to throw water on a fire to put it out. And in this case, the water is the oxidizer.
Which means it keeps the aluminum burning after a smaller engine melts the ice and ignites it. The exhaust is mainly hydrogen gas and aluminum oxide, which are much cleaner than today's rocket fumes. Although the new propellant still needs work, it recently shot a 9-foot test rocket a quarter mile into the air. Switching gears now, our New York correspondent Justin Warner reports on an exciting discovery in the world of arachnids.
A Central American jumping spider known as Bagheera kiplingi is the first known spider to prey mainly on plants. Their veggie of choice, specialized leaf tips of the acacia shrub. Venomous ants guard the leaf tips because they subsist on their nectar. But according to biologist Christopher Meehan, Bagheera spiders outmaneuver the ants every time. While completing his master's at Villanova University, Meehan and Brandeis University biologist Eric Olson filmed the spider's exploits.
So ants guard the vegetables all day long, and the spiders will approach a little concentration of these veggies. They stare at the situation as if they're solving some sort of little problem in their little heads. Sometimes they'll kind of turn their heads and think twice and back away. Maybe they don't think, but they sort of back away. And at some point, they just decide to go in for the kill. And they use these incredibly entertaining acrobatics to literally just steal a vegetable from under the noses of the ants. It's really surreal.
So why go through all that trouble for a plant when a bug might pack more nutritional punch? Well, Meehan notes that the leaf tips are available year-round, even in the dry season when insect prey would be scarce. Plus, the ants fight off all the other competition. However, he notes that not all Bagheera spiders are equally herbivorous. He and Olson found that the Mexican population subsists on 90% acacia leaves, while Costa Rican Bagheeras split meat and veggies 50-50. Meehan says the Mexican group's near total dependence on the plant has spawned other rather unspider-like behaviors.
We get these outbursts of what we call quasi-sociality. They have overlap among generations. The males play Mr. Mom. They guard the nest. The mothers guard the nest too. You have extended brood care and something called philopatry, which means love of the fatherland. They don't disperse from their plant, really. And they may even cooperate in a true sense or have reproductive division of labor here. We don't know yet.
He says it's striking that shared access to a reliable crop can make aggressive nomadic hunters conform to a more domesticated society. But then again, that's pretty much what happened to humans.
Thanks, Justin. And speaking of aggression, Suzanne's going to finish up this week's podcast with a story about what makes so-called killer bees so belligerent.
Africanized honeybees, sometimes known as killer bees, are hybrids between African and European bees. They tend to sting more often than European bees and frequently form swarms. Now scientists have discovered that the aggressiveness of Africanized bees depends on which parent was the African bee. Entomologist Greg Hunt of Purdue University explains.
There seems to be a paternal effect on honeybee stinging behavior. So if you have an Africanized bee, they tend to sting a lot more than a European bee. And if you make hybrids, you can cross a European queen to an African father or vice versa. If the hybrid has an African dad, they sting just as much as the African type. But if the hybrid is a European dad, then they don't sting quite as much.
He adds that while Africanized bees are aggressive and have spread in recent years to areas of the southwestern U.S., the average person isn't likely to come across them. But in the unlikely event that you should ever find yourself near a nest, Hunt does have some advice.
The best thing to do if you get stung is to run away, because the bees don't have really good eyesight, and they can only fly so fast. So if you're mobile, you can get away.
Andy says while Africanized bees sound scary, you're much more likely to get stung by common yellowjacket wasps, which are actually more dangerous.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, do people really turn to comfort foods in times of stress? We'll answer that question and also reveal why parents lie to their children more than you might think. We'll also tell you some exciting news about computers that are allowing brains to communicate with each other. Until then, keep current on the world of science and discovery by listening to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.